ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ एक्चुअलि सन्न्यासः दि पर्सन् हू हेज़् गान् थ्रू श्रवणम् एण्ड् मननम् हू हेज़् अण्डर्स्टुड् वाट् इस् देर् इस् ओन्ली परमात्मा एण्ड् such a person who revels in fullness or who has yet to ascertain the vision is already got through shravanam and mananam. The person who is nidhyasana karta is a jnani. Already he knows. Shravanam and mananam has given him the knowledge. Just nidhyasana means all the time he has to remind himself of the fact which he has clearly understood. Doesn't matter whether the person became a sannyasi or not physically. The mentally he must have been a sannyasi, gone through sannyasa. Mentally he must have been a dispassionate person. And the more he was with the shastram, the more he understood, the clarity came. For length of time, he must have done adequate shravanam, which must have helped him resolve his ignorance. And further, mananam also must have definitely helped him resolve his doubts also. That is why we always say shravanam is for only resolving ajnanam. But that ajnanam is samshaya purna ajnanam. Doubtful knowledge only will be there after shravanam also. For some people, shravanam itself is enough if they are really prepared enough. Because the pratibandhas, the obstacles will be there. Always there will be obstacles. The obstacles are actually these, some sort of papa karma phalam. Previous papa karma phalam will be there in the form of obstacles. In having that clarity, isn't it? However brilliant, intelligent we are also, it will be there. That obstacle is because of the, this way called pratibandha is because some papa karma phala. Even though you put in a lot of effort. So shravanam you do, what needs to be done you are doing, isn't it? You are doing. So you have done whatever you have done, what needs to be done you have done. Still, as it doesn't work means, there's a pratibandha. That pratibandha, that is why prayer. Prayer is always to tackle the pratibandha. Sahana otuvai shanti mantra. Isn't it? So, shravanam you are doing. And shravanam definitely helps you resolve ajnanam. But still, samshayas, doubts are there. And for which some more reflection is required. Maybe repeated shravanam may work like mananam also. And the doubts also resolve. Because there are so many people having so many views. You are exposed to a teacher and who knows sampradaya, person who knows the method of unfoldment, you are listening. It helps you really resolve your doubts. Now, but when you see other people having big crowds following them, you know, then it may shake your understanding. It may really make, oh my God, I thought I understood correctly, but my teacher was right. My teaching is correct, isn't it? My study of Shastram is okay. But they also follow the same Veda and they also have different views. We have people, other Vaidikas, who are, you know, they also have different views. So that because they also have their arguments. They also intelligently present arguments. And when the people who differ from your vision, I never call Advaitam a view, okay? I only say it's a vision of the fact. No, because it's not a view. But even though it is not a view, it's not a contention, Advaita Darshanam is not a view, it's not a contention, even though it's a vision of the reality, being non-dual, which is a fact, And then, but still, why people who also use Veda as a Pramana, we leave alone non-Vaidikas. Nastikas, we are not bothered. No, but even Nastikas also had to be tackled because, you know, Vaidikaha who believe in Veda, still they hold on to their own views. They have their own commentaries, their own, you know, followers, supporters. And they also follow Dharma. Any Vaidika will definitely follow Dharma. They are also pious people. They are not rogues. They are not dushtaha. That is the problem. If the dushtaha means you can just go ahead, isn't it? That the thing is, any Vaidika, even who is not given to the vision of the pursuit of the vision of the non-duality of the reality, non-dual reality, but still they are given to the Vaidika Dharma. Therefore, they are very pious, very good people. Dharma anushtataraha. You know, that definitely, therefore, pious, good people who also hold on to, strictly hold on to some different views. So, it will really always piety and the goodness, you know, goodness, and will really move you. So, lot of good things about, no, pious people. That's why we don't see them as virodhinaha. Because good people, pious people, therefore, we have to accept what they say. Don't need to, isn't it? But fact is a fact. You can't compromise with an acceptance of what the fact is. So, which means where they stand, what they are holding on to. What is the reason for them to hold on to the view they have? What is their standpoint? So, if I go to their standpoint, I can see. But have they come to this standpoint to see this is? Isn't it? That is that sort of understanding also. The doubts have to be resolved as well. That is called samshaya nivrittihi. Resolving your doubts. So you are 100% you are clear about this is what the vastu is. Vastu you arrive at as this atma, as your own sarupa. Then there is no other vastu. This is the vastu. And this vastu is secondless, non-dual. Now, because sarupa, that's what vichara, swarupa vicharaha. We have this statement called swarupa vicharaha. Now, the swarupa vicharaha means enquiry into the nature of the vastu, the reality which you arrived at as your own swarupa. Okay, chaitanyam chitihi, you arrived at. This is what the consciousness is. You understand, not as aparokshataya. Aparokshataya means not as something which is understood through the any instrument. There's no distance. You understand as the very innermost essence, really through the unfoldment. Then once you arrive at that, then you analyze the nature of the reality and see how the nature of the reality means the Shastra's words are used, isn't it? Shastra has so many terms, each word implying the reality, nature of the reality, which helps you to negate what the reality is not. Help you see, this is what the reality, this nature. When you say nityaha, suppose example is tell you, nityaha, atma nityaha, atma sarvagataha, atma yekaha. You know, like that we have all these terms. And then suppose nityaha means, the nityaha means, what is it in this world which can be, which, no, this word negates all the objects. Then that meaning implied by the term nityaha is applicable only for this. They understand, yes, isn't it? So that's called vichara, enquiry into the nature of the reality. So arrive at the self, first enquiry begins from outside. You negate everything as non-self, you arrive at the self. Then again, the swarupa vichara. What is the swarupam of that vastu, the atma, which is the content of I? Then you understand. Then this is the vastu. There is no other vastu, isn't it? You understand the oneness of it, secondlessness of it, non, everything you understand. All pervasiveness, how it is all pervasive, everything you understand very clearly. Then you also see other people's views, how they hold on to their own views. you don't hate them, but still you have to see the fallacy, you have to see the limitation in their understanding, from what is the standpoint from where they hold on to this particular, their own given view, and for which also they also quote Veda. They also quote Vedanta only. They have their own commentaries also, isn't it? And also then you see that, then you understand, okay, that means my understanding is, okay, their standpoint is this, then you have to see their limitation. That is what is really, you know, making your knowledge strong. Then you come to, and also Avedikas, the non-Nastikas, people who are not accepting Veda as a Pramanam, they also hold on to their own concept of truth. One person can say nothing is there, Shunyam is there. He may have his own reasons for that. And then I think the Shunyavadinaha are much stronger people. Really speaking, they are very supportive. There is Sankara feels that he got a lot of things from them. Finally, to establish what he wanted to establish. Very nice. They worked very hard. They are not ordinary people. Shunyavadinaha are not ordinary people. You know, for them to, they also put a lot of effort, a lot of effort to come to, but some point they miss because of the Shruti is not there with them. What is that highest point the human intellect can arrive at in terms of understanding what the reality is? They've arrived at. But they've not arrived at the reality. Why? Well, this buddhi, they use the best, they made the best use of their buddhi. That is the strength, okay? But one thing missed is what? Lacking was Shastra Pramanyam. Isn't it? Shastra Pramanam they missed. If, therefore, now, using Shankara was, Ashoka Bhagavatpada happened to be the, you know, genius. So what happened? He could also see them and see the limitation also, where they went wrong, and he could establish this. He's not his own discovery, it's re-established what is the timeless vision or the timeless scripture Veda, isn't it? So even the Nastika, Astika, Darshina, isn't it? All other different views also being incorrect are having their own limitations and having their own standpoints for them to have such views, and still they have not yet really arrived at the truth, because again logically you don't accept. Shruti Pramanam is there, Shruti says you never question, and you also use Yukti reasoning. Shruti Yukti go together here. Logically non-contradictory also. It's not simply mechanically blindly accepting something here, isn't it? The vision of the Shruti is logically also non-contradictory. Isn't it? That's called mananam, isn't it? That mananam is for resolving your doubts. So, ajnana nivrittihi shravana dvara and samshaya nivrittihi manana dvara. Isn't it? Even after that, because of the old habits, we'll have our own problems, isn't it? The forgetfulness, all other problems are caused by our old habits. Old habit caused problems will be there in the form of emotional obstacles. Old habit caused problems. They take time again. No? Then still, sometimes even though clear vision is there, doubt-free vision is there, that knowledge may not be handy, helpful, useful for you to deal with the day-to-day life when you really face problems in life. The knowledge I have got from Shastram, is it helpful for me in facing my situations in day-to-day life? Does it help me remain strong, or do I become weak like any other non exposed person, a non-shastra person, a non-satsangi, isn't it? For me, satsanga means only shastra, okay? I don't mean anything else. So suppose we also get emotionally, you know, shattered, and means, does the shastram help me or not? People also ask, what is the use of your studying shastram for so many years? I tell you, if you have not been studying shastram for so many years, some people criticize this, okay? See, I don't attend any classes, I don't believe in all these things, I'm okay. And this person has been listening to shastram for so many years, has been going attending these Gita classes and all those things, but still that person's behavior is like anybody else's behavior. So what is the use of studying shastram? Therefore, there's conclusion is what? There's no use of studying shastram. And Swamiji always says, for them, shastram has not yet become handy. But the time and effort they have put in shastram is not wasted. Okay? Because that will definitely help them. That's what. And always Swamiji, he tells one more thing. If the person has not put in this much effort, imagine it would have been worse than what he is at present also. Isn't it? Swamiji used to, for a joke, he used to tell in India, some daughters-in-law go and complain to Swamiji about, not all the time, some mothers-in-law all the time japamala. All the time they're sitting with japamala and doing the japam. You know, with the, you know, counting, the beads are there, no? All the time they with japamala, they sit and they'll be doing japam. But in spite of all the time, what is the use of doing japam all the time, Swamiji, but still, you know, they make my life miserable in the house. Sometimes, no? Rarely some Indian mothers-in-law, some sort of difficult, they give really hard time too. Then Swamiji used to tell them, it seems, imagine, thank God, because of japamala, japam, you are able to stay in the house. Otherwise, you can't even stay in the house, isn't it? Which means, we should not take any sadhana, any effort we put in to, you know, to correct ourselves, or to uplift ourselves, to improve ourselves, or for nāyānam, it never goes waste. Only thing is, it takes time to become fruitful. It's not a waste. Somewhere you have to begin, isn't it? So here, that habitual errors, habit caused emotional problems, and they remain as big obstacle, which really prevent this clear doubt fiage also from becoming effective. That is why Nididhyasana. So Nididhyasana is for Viparyaya Nivrittihi. Isn't it? So Ajnana Nivrittihi Shravana Dwara happens. Samshya Nivrittihi happens through Mananam. Viparyaya Nivrittihi happens only through Nididhyasana. The removal of, resolution of emotional obstacles is through Nididhyasana. Resolution of doubts through Mananam. Resolution of ignorance through Shravanam. That's why three steps. Why do we have three steps otherwise? Shravanam itself is enough, you could have told. Why Shravanam? Why Mananam? Why Nididhyasanam? Because each step takes care of one thing. Because Shravanam helps resolve the ignorance. You are not ignorant anymore after Shravanam. But that doesn't mean you are very clear. Doubtful knowledge is as good as ignorance. Doesn't serve the purpose. Therefore, Mananam is for Samshaya Nivritti, resolving your doubts. And Nididhyasanam is for Viparya Nivritti, resolve your emotional obstacles. So, intellectual obstacles, emotional obstacles. Obstacles in both forms have to be resolved through two different steps, isn't it? Mananam and Nididhyasanam. Ignorance, intellectual obstacles, emotional obstacles. Only then you can say, isn't it? Jnanam. Therefore, here, Vidvat Sanyasaha, when you say, Vidvat Sanyasaha means the person who is already aware of the fact, all that is there is Paramatma. And then for him, what there won't be need, emotional needs will not be there. He may be doing physical activity as long as he is alive as a Jeevan Mukta also. Body has to be taken care of, isn't it? Doing the needful. There is no dependency. There is no dependence. Emotional dependence is not there. Emotional needs are not there. Therefore, there is no binding disease also. There is no such thing. Without it, I cannot. That's not there. Okay? Therefore, that is why we say, for such a person alone, we say, Vidvat Sanyasaha. What else? Naturally, he is sannyasi. Because there is no pressure, no? Therefore, the ends that we saw in the last class, what are the ends which can accomplish? Maximum what you can accomplish as a result of any karma, whether mental or physical, by doing both also, what is the highest end you can accomplish? This person is not interested in that. That's also time bound. For the one who has accomplished the timeless everlasting end, one who has accomplished knows what it is, what it means by saying accomplishing the everlasting one, isn't it? Such a person, definitely, for the one who is reveling in fullness, inadequacy cannot be there. If inadequacy is not there, there won't be any interest. Isn't it? It's like how we all feel towards balloons. How dispassionate we are towards balloons and toys. Radha may be interested. He is still. We have, no, not that way. It is for a wise person, the whole, everything in the world is like as good as the balloon only. That's, isn't it? That is why pakvata, paripurnata, isn't it? Then vidvat sanyasaha. Then he, all the time he is, so the jnana nishtha. Jnana nishtha means, that's why nididhyasana dwara, jnana nishtha, for which, I mean, he is committed, no? for that ascertained, ever remembered, doubt-free vision. He can just be with that nididhyasana, which means, you know, sanya means all that he can't be without shastra. He is only with the shastra all the time, with the vision, with the shastra. That's why putreshana, vitteshana, lokeshana, no, he is not interested in anything loka. He is not interested in higher worlds. He is not interested in local. You know, this all day available world also. Not interested in Ikea, not interested in higher worlds, not interested in Ikea is supalakshanam for any supermarket, okay? The whole jagat. World malls. World of malls. He is not interested. Shopping complexes. No, he is not a shopper. He can't afford to be a shopper anymore. Isn't it? Which means that because he knows all the ends, limited ends, he doesn't recur. Ends with limitations. Then vidvat sanyasaha. There is no yeshana. There is no desire. There is no passion for children, for progeny, for... I'm not saying people who have passion for progeny are useless, okay? Please don't mistake. I'm only talking about the jnani. No passion for, no. We should not, see, we have to understand, that's why only in the light of Shastram, you can accommodate everything. You can understand the person with the desire for children, the person without desire for children also. Therefore, you are safe. There's neither hatred towards anybody, nor, you know, anything. You are, okay, it's natural for one to be like this. Natural for one to be like this also. Isn't it? We don't judge. We remain, keep quiet. That's why the more bigger your vision, wider your vision, more non-judgmental you become, more you accommodate, more non-judgmental you become, and more free also you are. More pressure, you are free from pressure also. The pressure itself is what? Isn't it? Non-accommodation is also one of the reasons for pressure. So here, the clarity comes means then you are free. You are free means you let everybody be with whatever they want to do also. So this Eshanathraya, what I'm saying, this person can't afford to have desire for children, desire for even higher worlds, desire for even, any ends for that matter. That is why that is Vidvat Sanyasaha is also said here in the very first verse. And what about Vividisha Sanyasaha? The person who is not yet understood, has yet to attain knowledge. But still this person also, knowing the value of knowledge, having Purusharthan Ischeha, and having really Thivra Mukshah, very firm desire for jnanam and knowledge. Okay, firm desire for knowledge is there, that the thirst for knowledge is there, but still, he has yet to understand. Such a person, Vidisha Sanyasaha. Because he is also not interested in other ends. Isn't it? Then Vividisha Sanyasaha. Vividisha. Vividisha also is another desiderative word. Vetum Icha Vividisha. Jnatum Icha Jignyasa. Isn't it? Moktum Icha Muksha. Desiderative word. Vividisha means Vetum Icha. So Vividishu, the one who wants to know, with the total commitment to the pursuit of knowledge, this person also really takes to a life of sannyasa. Now Vividisha Sanyasi is also still ajnani but still nishkami. He is ignorant but still he is free from, he has grown out of, he is also dispassionate. But this jnani, naturally jnani is totally dispassionate. Now for him, after Shravana Mananam, only he can be contemplative. There's a contemplative disposition of the mind. That nothing, the mind is not, mind cannot be dragged by anything else. Nothing can tempt the mind. Nothing can drag the mind. Why? Mind is not available. Why not available? It is all totally given to Shastra, vision, Shastra's vision. How has it been given? Because that is what Sukham. Isn't it? Greater Sukham. You will go for greater Sukham or simpler Sukham. Go for greater joy or you will go for simple time-bound pleasure, isn't it? It's all Pakvata, isn't it? So this, because Shravanam Mananam has given, blessed him with this knowledge means, naturally, and then after having done Shravanam and Mananam, what is there? After Shravanam and Mananam, for length of time the person has done means, sannyas, naturally there will be dispassion. Isn't it? Then a dispassionate person means, doesn't mean he has hatred towards anything in the world. They neither hatred nor, neither passion nor aversion towards anything. The one passion is only for jnanam means not having passion or aversion towards anything else, not being interested in anything else, because nothing in the world really, he's not that can give him what he wants also. He has already got what he wanted. So why should he go anywhere else? You already have got something what you wanted. Then you won't be interested. It's typically like when you go shopping, you go with the intention of buying something. You found it somewhere. And will you be going to again 10 shops? Why should you go? You are intelligent, means you won't be going, isn't it? Once you got what you wanted, then what is the need for you to go? That is why Vidvat Sanyasa. Okay? Having got what he wanted, does not need to go for anything else. As long as you don't get what you wanted, then you'll be really searching for that everywhere. That is Vidvat Sanyasaha. Then Vidisha Sanyasaha, now this person is very clear, he is also adequately dispassionate, and he also knows it is the knowledge alone which can give me what I wanted. Naturally, he becomes dispassionate towards, it's a passion for knowledge. Vidvat Sanyasi is all dispassionate because he's got what he needs to get. Whereas Visha Sannyasi knows where what he wants, where is it available, he knows. Therefore, he had interest in anything else. That is Visha Sannyasi. Okay, for both of them, okay, we say Sannyasa, Vidvat and Vidisha. Vividishuhu Vidvat, Vidwan. Got it, I'm saying? Otherwise, Karma Yoga lifestyle. There's no choice. No choice. That is why the whole thing is, even after Jnanam, should I do Karma? That is the big thing, isn't it? There are many people who hold on to this view, we have to do Karma even after Jnanam. For moksha. And they want to combine karma in the form of physical activity or in the form of upasana, mental activity, with the jnanam for as a means of moksha. This is what the Shankar Bhagavatpada condemns everywhere. The most favorite thing for him is condemning the jnana karma samuchaya vadi. That is his. Why? Because then you. Isn't it? It won't be. Because even for that you need a clarity. For you, for one to say you don't need anything other than knowledge for moksha. Knowledge is enough. But that knowledge requires preparedness, isn't it? Otherwise, knowledge is not possible. For preparedness, you do live this life. Live the Vedic way of life. And live a disciplined life. Isn't it? Veda enjoined life. Or this is the way. At least know your duties, do your duties in conformity with dharma. That's the only way. So dharma anushtanam emphasis so much. Without dharma anushtanam, whatever you do, that becomes animalistic behavior. With the dharma governed means, you're taken care of. Dharma protects you. That's why we say dharma rakshanam means what? Dharma rakshanam means if I follow dharma, that is dharma rakshanam. Then because I follow dharma, then I become disciplined, that is dharma, mama rakshanam. Okay, dharma protects me. Dharma rakshati rakshitaha. Okay, dharma protects only if it is protected. If dharma is not protected, and dharma cannot protect you, you will be unprotected. Protection means what? How does the dharma protect me? Just making me disciplined. Makes me disciplined. Dharma protecting dharma implies living dharma. Living dharma means following dharma. The only way initially to protect myself. There's no way of protecting myself straight away. Jumping to jnanam without following dharma is not at all possible. Because that prepares, isn't it? So mental discipline, isn't it? The clean, the pure agitation-free mind is required for even shastram to be, shravanam to be effective, mananam to be effective, nididhyasanam will be possible. Only if, the basic preparedness is there. That is why dharma rakshana dwara, through the protection of dharma, only what now? You protect yourself relatively, thereby you attain jnanam, jnana prapti dwara, through attainment of knowledge, you protect yourself absolutely. There is no protection other than, dharma protects, knowledge protects. Dharma protects relatively, jnanam protects absolutely. Otherwise, don't seek protection anywhere else, anything else. That is what the unprepared, the sakami, being sakami is not a wrong thing. Can be sakami means the one with the desires. Being desirous, having desires, being passionate, having passion for things is not a problem, isn't it? Shastram says only agyanam, it's only immaturity. That is why you can't become overnight mature person. Any seed takes its own time to become a sapling to seedling and sapling and grow into a small plant and grow into a big tree and then grow into a huge trunked, multi-branched big tree which can give shade for so many things. No? It takes years. The same way every individual also from being a Sakami, you have to grow slowly. That's why discovering dispassion itself is the first step in maturity. You become relatively mature. You're relatively mature means you discover dispassion. So you have disease, natural disease, fulfill the disease in conformity with dharma so that in the long run, you learn through your own experiences. If you don't live dharma, then you can never learn from your experiences. You can have some experience, but there's no learning there. You can have experiences, but you can never learn from your experiences. See, being able to learn from one's own life's experiences, one must be intelligent, sharp. And that sharpness required for learning from one's life experiences, isn't it? One must live a life of dharma. Dharma anushtanam is for you to become intellectually sharp, emotionally alert, okay? Really strong. That way it helps. Dharma anushtanam is for two things, for becoming emotionally strong and for intellectually sharp. Only then you learn. You learn from experiences. That learning from life's experiences help you discover, helps you discover dispassion. Then that is relative maturity. As a relatively mature person, then your passion for knowledge helps you attain knowledge, and through knowledge you become absolutely mature. Isn't it? So if we remaining immature, from being immature, overnight you cannot become absolutely mature directly. You have to become relatively mature first. Then you can become absolutely mature. Isn't it? That is what I told long ago, the verse. I don't know whether you all remember that verse or not. Even the Shastram is a very simple verse. Everybody quotes this. Janmana jayate shudraha. Karmana dvija uchyate, veda pathena viprahasyat, brahmano brahma vedanat. There the word brahmana is used to mean a person who is absolutely mature. That means he cannot mature anymore. That is absolute. What is the level of maturity one should reach? How much one can mature, isn't it? Emotionally. So he says, Brahmanaha. Brahmanaha Bhamma Vedanath. So who is that absolutely mature person known by the term Brahmanaha? Absolutely mature, most mature is the Brahmanaha. Otherwise, not. And Bhamma Vedanath. Only through the knowledge of the reality. It is the knowledge of the Parabrahma, absolute reality, which makes one absolutely mature. That person is a Brahmanaha. But for him to become absolutely mature, he must be relatively mature. Which means he must live his life as a Vipraha. Vipraha is more mature person. More mature means what? He is living a life of dharma, enjoined by the Shastram, knowing why he should live a life of dharma. Isn't it? Only this person, knowing why he should live a life of dharma, what will be the loss if he does not live a life of dharma? What will be the gain if he lives a life of dharma? Knowing the value of dharma, when he lives a life of dharma, he is called a vipraha. He is more mature. Viprashabdartha, isn't it? Then who is the one who can live his life of dharma, knowing why he should live a life of dharma? The only who first already started living a life of dharma, not even knowing the value of dharma. He is mature. He is not more mature, the most mature. He is mature. At least the person, he lives a life of dharma. How does he live a life of dharma? Not knowing the value of dharma. Because he is looked after by elders. That is where we all, because there is a time when you cannot understand the value of dharma. But still you have to live a life of dharma. Living a life of dharma will help you understand the value of dharma. So living a life of dharma, understanding the value of dharma will help you accomplish the ultimate. Isn't it? That is why we say upanayana karma anantaram. Yajna upavita karma. After the upanayanam ceremony, after the initiation to study of the shastram, now that day onwards the person starts. No, there's no discipline. What does a child, 7-year-old, 9-year-old will know? No, the parents nicely, they know how to pet him, pamper him, pat him, backstroke him. So they'll do cuddle him, no? They do all those things and somehow make him do what they want him to do. Isn't it? Even a child who has taught, Trikala Sandhya Vandanam, three times, Samhita Dhanam, all karma, ritual, religious life, it becomes discipline. First of all, he becomes disciplined. Get up in the morning, do this in the morning. It's all discipline, isn't it? More a discipline. There's no meaning, nothing. He doesn't understand Gayatri meaning or anything. He's too young to understand. But still he has to do Gayatri Mantra Japa. he can't understand the meaning, but still as a child he has to start doing. Okay, what about the people who are not given to this? At least doing a duties in keeping the dharma, isn't it? Being as a human being, you see how others live, isn't it? That helps. Then we call a person mature person. The one who does not live a life of dharma, but still eats, drinks and what does everything. Whatever he wants, he does. Whatever he doesn't want, he does not do. So one who lives by his own instincts, by his own ways of thought, not the thinking, and that he is a Shudra. So every child is allowed to be sanctioned to be a Shudraha. He is the immature. Veda allows a child to be a Shudraha. Janmana Shudraha. Isn't it? But Karmana, karma means here you mean, then by this, but start doing things, then come to dharma, then you become mature. Then you know the value of dharma, live a life of dharma, then you are more mature. Then you become the most mature in jnanam. So there's no how to become more and more mature. It's not overnight you can't become mature. Unless there's some very rare cases who would have worked hard in the previous lives and they're born jnanis. They're born just to attain jnanam. Okay, very rare. But generally for entire society, humanity, Veda prescribes this lifestyle. We are talking about this for the general, isn't it? Majority. So we say that's why karma comes into the picture. So here we are seeing, and also last class, the whole class is spent, in the last Thursday class was spent only for showing how Shankara Bhagavatpada, in his introductory commentary, he established very clearly that jnanam cannot be combined, need not be combined, should not be combined with karma or upasana. Karma, the physical oral activities, and upasana, mental activity, isn't it? No karma is, especially meditation is something very attractive, the whole world. Okay, we saw, we already heard 9th verse. Yeah. Yeah. And then there, let me tell you briefly before I go to the next verse. The 9, 10 and 11, these three verses discuss the samuchchayaha, combination of karma and upasanam. Karma and upasanam means a physically performed action or a meditation, mental activity can be combined. So this combination, synthesis is called samuchchayaha, which I already told. Which means, doesn't matter whether you combine one meditation with another meditation, two mental activities you combine, or you combine one ritual with a meditation. You can combine them. Now you can, the samuchchayaha itself is possible only if both can independently produce results. Individually should be productive. If a karma by itself can produce result, no? Then if upasana, meditation also can produce result individually, then such individually, independently result giving, result productive karma or upasanam is called angi. So two angis can be combined. Okay, that is what he said. So here the first three verses talk about the combination of this upasanam and karma. Karma upasana samuchchayaha is discussed. And the big discussion we had was on actually the word vidya is used for upasanam. You should remember the word vidya, that is why in English translations, the word vidya is translated into knowledge. With our own limited understanding, if we go, we'll go wrong. The word vidya has two meanings. One is what? Actually, atma jnanam or brahma jnanam. Knowledge of the reality, knowledge of the self. Other meaning is what? Devata jnanam. Means upasana, meditation. Devata vishaya jnanam means meditation. So upasanam means meditation, mental activity. And the vidya, the word vidya has just two meanings. Which meaning should be taken here? That's what the big argument Shankara has to, because when he writes commentary, and he has to make it very clear, this word vidya, which also means self-knowledge, in this context, it means only upasana, meditation. Okay, therefore, that's what is discussed here. So, 9th verse, 9th, 10th and 11th, all the three discuss only karma, upasana, samuchchayaha. Synthesis of the combination of karma and upasanam. Karma, you can take it as a ritual, okay, which is a physical activity, which involves a physical activity. Upasanam is meditation. You don't need to worry about all those things, but for you to have an idea of how the Vedic society would have been, isn't it? Just understanding, I'm giving all these things. I want you to know more about it. Okay. So first verse does not say anything much. The 9th verse only condemns the individual performance of karma or individual practice of upasanam. Individual independently practicing upasana means what? If a person performs only ritual, does not combine it with the meditation, upasanam, then that result will be very limited result. Isn't it? So similarly, a person practices meditation, he follows some upasanam prescribed in the karma upasana kanda, but he does not follow any, perform any ritual means, he only does that, isn't it? So it is definitely, whether you perform one ritual, still it is productive. It is useful only. It is not a waste of time. You perform a ritual, whether you practice meditation individually, it will give you limited result. But still, sometimes now Upanishads, they want to help us, want us to combine both. Because samuchchayaha, combination, if you combine both, and then it will give you better results. So to help you enjoy better results, to make you do both, isn't it? Because it takes care of meditation also, you practice, no? It contributes for your even personality development also, in terms of clarity, in terms of stillness, etc. So make the person do both and enjoy the benefit of both, better benefit. It has to make it sound important, isn't it? To make that, you know, it condemns as though it is useless. It's not really useless, okay? That's why I said it's exaggeration. If you say the person who performs only karma will enter into blinding darkness. The person who practices only meditation, follows upasanam, will go to greater, worse, isn't it? Much more darkness. Blinding darkness. Means what? How can the Vaidikam karma do such a bad thing for a person? No. It's only exaggeration. Condemnation is not for the sake of condemning, for highlighting the greater importance of the combination. Samuchayaha. That is why I told you, remember this word, nahi ninda nyayena. Ninda is not for criticism or condemnation, is not for the purpose of condemning, but for, isn't it, praising something else. To praise somebody else, I had to, one person is condemned. It's not actually, intention is not to condemn this person. Condemning this person is not the intention. But to praise other person, sometimes we condemn, isn't it? Like that here also, this, that is what is andam tamaha, means don't take very seriously. Andam tamaha pravishanti. I also told you all those things in the class, isn't it? It's an old lesson. Okay, let's go to next lesson now. Yeah. So andam tamaha pravishanti ye avidyam upasate. And see, again, the word avidya, please be very careful. In the ninth mantra, the word avidya means karma. That is why in Ishavasa Upanishad, every word gives completely different meaning. Literally, the word avidya means ignorance. Isn't it? Avidya also means here prakriti. But here the word avidya means karma. Ye avidyam upasate means those who give importance only for performing a ritual, and those only perform ritual, which means the whole focus is on performing karma alone. They do not pay any attention to upasanam at all, isn't it? They ignore upasanam. Such people enter into blinding darkness. They go to narakam. Really nothing. It's not real, okay? But what does it mean? For you to understand, okay, which means you leave it, you'll go for samuchaya. Isn't it? Just to make people do the combined things. Similarly, ye vidyagum rataha, ya u vidyayagum rataha, tataha bhuyaha iva. See, andam tamaha pravishanti. Now they enter into blinding darkness. Who ke te andam tamaha pravishanti, ye avidyam upasate. Those who are given to only to the performance of rituals. Upasate should be understood as paying attention, giving more attention. That's what. Ye avidyam upasate. Those people who perform, they're given to totally only to the performance of rituals or performance of karma. Such people enter into blinding darkness. Means go to narakam. Next sentence. Tataha bhuyaha iva. Te tamaha. Mean tataha bhuyaha tamaha means what now? Te, those people, ye, ya means ye, u vidyayagum rataha. Those who are completely immersed only in meditation, ignoring the karma totally, isn't it? Such people also enter into much, isn't it? More blinding darkness. Much utter darkness. Isn't it? More darkness. Which means they also go to hell. So they don't give serious things here. You have to remember, if one karma is performed, if that karma is not productive, And if it is combined with another karma, which is productive, then you should not call that samuchayaha. You should not call it combination. The whole thing should be taken as only one karma. So combining the non-productive karma with a productive karma or upasanam should be taken as one karma, which is called what? Anga angi bhava sambandaha. It is not samuchayaha. So difference between samuchayaha and anga angi bhava sambandaha. These are all not at all important for you. Okay? Your lesson is over with the 8th mantra. But still I am teaching. Is it clear? Just for, because to complete, you know what it is, isn't it? What is samuchaya vadaha and all that. This is a 10th mantra. If a 10th mantra has to say that how karma, the possibility of samuchaya combination is established in the 10th mantra. What is said in the 10th mantra? Look at this. Anyadeva ahuhu vidyaya. Anyadeva ahuhu means vidyaya. Anyad ahuhu avidyaya. The word vidya in the first line means meditation. The word avidya in the first line means karma. Okay? Physical. Kayikam. Physical activity. Ritual. Isn't it? Kayikam karma. So, word avidya means karma. The word vidya means upasanam. Karma upasanam. So, karma upasana. Therefore, what he says, anyad means the phalam. The karma produces different phalam by itself. Individually, independently, it is capable of producing a result. And then upasanam also individually is capable of producing result. Therefore, because they are individually, independently productive, they are eligible to be combined. Samuchyaha is possible. There is no anga angi bhava sambandha. They are not one karma, two different karmas, one manasam, one kayikam, the two different actions, but independently productive, useful, therefore combination is possible. Samuchyaha is possible. Is it clear? So again, word avidya and vidya. Avidya is equal to upasanam, mental activity, meditation. Vidya means karma. And they produce palam. What is the palam? We don't see in the verse, does not say. But karmana pitrulokaha. If you perform your karma, one can go to what now? Pitrulokaha. If you perform upasanam, you can go to devalokaha. Isn't it? So, upasanena devalokaha, karmana pitrulokaha. The two different lokas. Two higher worlds. What is the karma is independently capable of producing the fruit of attaining, going to Pitruloka, world of manes, they say. Don't ask whether I have gone there, okay? What Shastram says, I'm telling you. And also, upasanena, upasanaya, I can say both, okay? By practice of meditation, certain upasanas prescribed in the Shastram, one can go to Devalokaha. Two different lokas. You can attain as results. Therefore, they both are what now? Angis. Angi means what? Any karma, any ritual, any meditation which is independently capable of producing a result is called Angi. Angi. Okay? So, anything you do as part of that is called Anga. You know, two Angis you combine. Therefore, what now? What it's the first line states, they both are angis. Therefore, combination of both is possible. That is what is established in the samuchayatvam, possibility of samuchayaha is established in the 10th mantra, nothing much. Nothing more than that. All simple things only. Iti sushruma dhiranam ye nastad vichachakshire. So this we understand. So, this performance of ritual will help one go to Pitrulokaha. Our performance of ritual produces attainment of Pitrulokaha as a result, isn't it? The practice of meditation, upasanam, will bless one with attainment of Devalokaha. They produce results, they are effective. independently, they're productive, means this, who tells this? People who have studied Shastram, who have performed it, practiced it, who know the value of it, who are very clear, no? The well-informed people who had taught us before, they, no? We heard them saying this. Upanishad says that, which means this particular expression, the second line is mainly to tell you that nothing we say from our, as we think, we understand. What has been being said in the tradition, which has been coming down, is what is said here. Okay? Again, the word vichachakshire is a lit past perfect tense verb. It usually it would have been vyachachakshire. No, that A is dropped. That so chandasa prayogaha. Just take it easy. It's not. We don't give much time there. Okay. So we go to next one now. The next one only presents the first establishes the possibility of synthesis. Now teaches. Now he is going to what? Samucheha is actually discussed here. Vidyancha avi vidyancha vidyancha. Yastad Vedo Bhayagam Saha Avidyaya Mrityum Tirtva Vidyaya Mrita Mashnute. So if you combine, what will you get? Independently karma is performed, it will help you go to Pitrulokaha. Which karma, don't ask me. As you know, the karma, the specific karma prescribed in the Veda, okay, karma kanda. Specific upasanam prescribed in the upasana kanda. If you practice that, then as a result of which, as per the instructions, as per the injunctions, as per the stipulations laid by the Veda, if you practice, then definitely you'll go to Devaloka. That's the result, isn't it? But now what he says, if you perform, combine both, what will happen? As samuchyaha, that is said here. Vidyancha avidyancha. Again, karma and upasanam. Avidya means karma, vidya is upasanam. If you combine, yaha tad veda. The one who, the yaha means he who, Veda means knows, literally it means knows. But here Veda implies one who knows, thereby one who follows. Veda implies what? Janati jnatva anutishtati api. One who knows and one who follows as well. One who understands, isn't it? Yaha, one who knows this means one who follows these two together, combines the karma with the upasanam, combines the ritual with the meditation. Ubayagum, so saha comes. The word saha, together. The word saha is used in two meanings, one meaning is along with. No? Along with. One meaning is together. Only when you use this saha, saha is an indeclinable expression, which means along with. Now, narmadaya saha bead agachati. Bead comes along with narmada. Saha. Along with, it means then you get to use the third case. The saha should go with the instrumental case, isn't it? Suppose, otherwise, it simply you said together sense we use, you don't need third case. The vidyancha, avidyancha, saha. Or you can say bead, narmadacha. Narmadacha, no, bead, narmadacha, saha, agachataha. Then which means you don't need to use the instrumental. That's what I'm saying. Saha means so it is used in the sense of together. Anyway, so, sal, unwanted, not necessary. Don't worry. But I had to tell them. I had to tell all these things. So, ubhayagam. Ubhayagam. Saha, yaha, vidyancha, avidyancha, ubhayam, saha, veda. Got it now? One who knows both together, one who follows both together, combining them with one another. Avidyaya mrityum tirtva vidyaya amritam ashnute. This is the lesson. I have come to the present class. Till now I was in the old class. Avidyaya mrityum tirtva. So avidyaya means by karma one gets the benefit of mrityu taranam, crossing over mrityuhu. What does the word mrityuhu mean? First one crosses over the mrityuhu, then vidyaya, as a result of meditation, one attains amritam. Two things happen. One is mrityu taranam first, then attainment of amritam. So what does the word mrityu taranam mean? Crossing over a mrityu means what? Attainment of immortality means what? Because these words are used in the context of karma, it is not mokshaha. Understand very clearly, because always again big argument comes. The word mrityuhu, mrityum tarati, means one crosses over death. Literal meaning, mrityuhu literally means death. One overcomes death means what? One becomes, again next year, then one becomes immortal means what? Here mrityu taranam, mrityuhu implies, Shankar Bhagavatpada says in his commentary, you know, swabhavika karma jnanam. Swabhavikam karma, swabhavikam jnanam. Mrityuhu is equal to, can I do it in Sanskritam also? Mrityuhu is equal to swabhavikam karma, swabhavikam jnanam. Now next question comes, what does the word swabhavikam karma means, isn't it? Suppose a person, physical activities, whatever actions you do, all your activities, external behavior, is completely governed by your own instincts. Natural behavior, naturally, whatever you want to do. Now, the actions are governed by your own likes and dislikes, your own whims and fancies, your own instincts. You know, completely no discipline at all. Means, such actions called natural ways of functioning, isn't it? Natural way of functioning. Ways of functioning is called, we say, swabhavikam karma. Okay? Which means, all the indisciplines go, one becomes disciplined. The improper actions become proper actions. The actions are not governed anymore by one's instincts, but by one's knowledge of right and wrong. Dharma. Isn't it? That's called a mrityu taranam. I told in earlier I said how one's behavior, isn't it? One becomes from being a Shudra, one becomes Dvijaha, and from here a Vipraha. Isn't it? You can understand now how one becomes from being indisciplined, one becomes disciplined. From being instinctive, one becomes Dharma governed behavior. The person of Dharma governed behavior. Isn't it? He becomes called Bhutitan. One minute. Another thing, not only external life, there's inner life also we have, isn't it? Mental life also is there. Bahya Jivanam, Antara Jivanam, we have two lives actually. Externally, I may look clean with all vibhuti and all wearing saffron and all that sit here. But internally, what type of thoughts I entertain? Swabhavika vritti pravahaha means there's a constant flow of naturally arising thoughts. Unfortunately, we have no say over thoughts, isn't it? External actions, at least our desires arise, we can manage, use your willpower, use your knowledge of right and wrong, you can manage, isn't it? So, this karma, we are involved in this karma, means the performance of karma definitely makes you disciplined, makes you righteous, makes you, you know, subtle-minded. This vritti is also natural flow of thoughts, means the thought. Sometimes you don't like your own thoughts. My God, I hate my thoughts. Why these thoughts come? You don't want the thoughts to come, but still thoughts come. Isn't it? This is what helplessness. And how to, but as a Vaidika, as a person who has surrendered my life, my surrendered my will, my thing to Shastram. Shastra Sharanam. I have attained Shastra Sharanagati means what? 100 myself to Shastram. I just live what Shastram tells me to do. Isn't it? I live a life enjoying with Veda Shastram. Means then Veda Shastram really doesn't want me to entertain those thoughts. Bar such thoughts. But how to bar such thoughts over which I have no say? How to stop such thoughts? I can't stop them, isn't it? That is why upasanam, you know, helps you manage such thoughts, and slowly it bars such unwanted, unnecessary thoughts. Not upasanam, sorry. This by itself. The karma itself helps you. Okay? Avidya, here the karma, the performance of karma helps you what now? Manage your external behavior, internal thoughts and also external behavior. Isn't it? Inner life, external life. Both life becomes disciplined. So swabhavika vritti is the thoughts, natural flow, naturally flowing thoughts, unwanted thoughts, they become slowly resolved. They're taken care of. That is why karma helps. Avidyaya mrityu taranam is equal to disciplining one's inner external life of activities. Mental activity, physical activity, both. Mentally arising thoughts, naturally arising thoughts, and physically performing actions. They both become managed and disciplined. That is the result of performance of ritual, which is said to be mrityu taranam. And here for people who are not living the Vedic way of life, who are not totally, even Indians are not living 100% Vedic way of life, okay? There's no... But generally, what I want to understand here, how to see the relevance of the meaning of this sentence for people like us? You know, see, if a person, if you are following Vedic way of life means, not even though not 100% or 50% or 60%, at least somehow I can live a lifestyle which is very close to this teaching means, if you understand how a real Vedika would have lived in the Vedic period, or even now the proper Vedikas even know how they live. That is why the whole day, you know, if karma means what? Every karma means not just the ritual, performing fire ritual alone. They bring in Bhagavan in everything. Begin the day with the prayer. Early morning when you open your eyes itself, first think of ritual. What is the ritual? Praying is a ritual. Prayer is ritual. Or worship is ritual. Isn't it? That's how it becomes, karma begins. First, even opening your eyes also begins like this. That's why you don't need to do the same thing, but you can, how for him, how karagre vasate lakshmihi karamadhye saraswati karamuletu govindaha prabhate karadarshanam. The day opens means begins with the prayer. Nothing, don't allow, before something else comes, before this star news comes and falls. who shot whom, okay? Our paper news, the paper, I see the papers really, it feels so sad when you see papers all over rolling, in this country. Yeah. So much of such a waste. What is that? All the paper news, early morning news, somebody raped somebody, somebody got killed, somebody looted. This is the news, no. That is what is the karma, okay? So day begins with the prayer. And day, then you put your foot down from the bed, parvatas tanamandale, padas prasham kshamaswame. Every small bit. And even for brushing, we have mantra. Why? Because we don't have brush. We only neem stick for a brush. And steer the stick. I had to pray to the stick, please protect me, help me. Okay, daily, there is a mantra for brushing before you do, not big mantra, there's a prayer to the stick also. There's a prayer. Every small action has a prayer, isn't it? And a snana mantra we have. You know, for snanam, for bathing, there's a mantra, there's a prayer. Brushing is a prayer. Eating, of course, there's a prayer. And before eating, we offer it to Bhagavan also, then start. Which action, you know, regular, this is all karma. Karma means not only Agnihotram alone. Of course, Agnihotram, the proper fire ritual, Vedika is supposed to, Grihastha is supposed to do. What I'm saying, how the day, you know, there's no time, which means until the whole day, isn't it? And if you're living means for everything, there's a lot of time, there's a time consuming. No, you're kept very busy, engaged. And Grihastha means your children also, isn't it? See, wasn't how busy, there's no time for any wrong thinking, isn't it? That's why mechanically don't let you don't think anything else. Busy with the household work and things, so busy, there's no karma keeps you, not mere mechanically you are not doing. Consciously you are doing what you are doing, your duties. Consciously you are doing, focused you are doing, attentively you are doing, whatever you are doing, that takes care of what now. So you know the purpose of whatever you are doing. Therefore you see that there's no adharma involved. There's no mechanical behavior. And even if something else is said, there's a prayer comes, isn't it? Somehow prayer is there. So the whole days, the karma you keep really keeps you so engaged and packed, isn't it? So there's no dharma, isn't it? Adharma anushtanam is not possible. Dharma, transgressing dharma is not possible. This karma helps you live dharma. Isn't it? Live dharma, not mechanical, because it also keeps you disciplined. Then that's what mrityu taranam here, which is relatively crossing over death. Otherwise you are killing yourself. You don't follow dharma, I don't do what is to be done, simply sitting lazy, idle, not knowing what I'm doing or doing something mechanically, because I know that how to do, mind is somewhere, means no, it's not attentively, alertly, consciously done means, no, you can just go and do something, physical work, but mind can be elsewhere also. Yeah. Don't do it, isn't it? Don't do any adharmata, which means, because more really, you know, how subtly it works. That's called mrityu taranam. Relatively protecting oneself from death. It's not killing, isn't it? Really. Otherwise, don't look out, you are killing yourself. Mrityu taranam. Then, vidyaya amritam ashnute. Vidyaya amritam ashnute means what? Devatatma praptihi. Devatatma praptihi means by practice of meditation. Amrita means not, it is not, again, is also not nitya muktihi. Here, apekshika amritatvam. Relative. As a result of this, one can go to different lokas, one can remain for a long time, you can avoid coming back soon. It's called relative freedom, not absolute freedom. Because you have to remember, knowledge alone will free you, give you, bless you with absolute freedom. So, vidyaya amrita mashute means one attains relative immortality. Which means one can avoid being born soon. That is what is said here. Is it clear? Mm-hmm. Okay. And who are we going to be going to see next also?
Only this vidyaya is meditation.
Yeah. Vidyaya meditation, avidyaya by karma. By karma, one can mrityu taranam, which implies both, isn't it? Swabhavika karma, swabhavikam jnanam, isn't it? Which means the natural ways of functioning and natural ways of thinking that gets corrected. Yeah. So vidyaya amrutam ashnute. That's what I said. The meditation one attains relative moksha. Relative, you know, apekshika moksha, not nitya moksha. Relative immortality, which means going to some higher lokas, depend upon which upasana you do, isn't it? Going to higher loka and remaining there for some time means you enjoy some pleasures without the pain. Because sometimes you need, the purity is required for enjoying better pleasures. And for purity, impurities have to go also, isn't it? So impurities are removed by karma and it helps you have the purity upasana so that you can enjoy better things. Which means dukkha, without, there's no pain for you. So pain-free pleasure you can enjoy. But it is time-bound. Pleasure means time-bound, you should remember. It is not moksha sukham. It is not eternal, isn't it? Painful pleasure alone you can enjoy in this world as a human being. Pain-free pleasure you can enjoy in higher lokas. Painful, pain-free. Painless pleasure. But painless pleasure, nice, we can stay there forever, that is not possible. Only for number of years visa is given. Isn't it? Now, painless pleasure means we all want. We don't even know, we have not even tried that. So even if we try work very hard by doing karma, combining it with upasanam and then somehow getting punyam and going there, enjoy painless pleasure also, and the punyam gets exhausted and you will be sent back, means it become most painful. Or whenever you miss, you lose painless pleasure and it's the most painful thing, isn't it?
So, Swami, here when Abhishek says that Devata Upasana, is it all the 30 gods or is it all Devata Upasana?
No, mainly Hiranyagarbha. We're going to see that later on.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Okay, here we upasana, we are going to see that now. Okay, just this much talks about this karma, okay? So karma upasana samachya topic is over. This one. We went into the next one.
Where is the samachya we spoken here? It's not spoken. It's spoken of the individual benefits only, but not the samachya essentials.
That is what you're teaching. You can't expect that from the mantra. See, the thing is, that is what this teaching, isn't it? You can't see. That is why Upanishads, all the words are not here. So that is why I said, when I taught it, sir, I said, what do the three verses, it's also good for even people who are not interested also, not interested, but at least to know how the teaching is, isn't it? Why do we need teaching? Because you cannot understand anything. It only says, but it doesn't even talk about the end. That is why commentator. What the mantra does not convey, and what mantra, what is implied, intended in by the mantra has been expressed, brought to light by the commentator. That's why Shankara Bhagavad Pada, Padasparsham. Okay? Why? Because how we can't understand anything otherwise. How do you understand what is samuchayaha? And upasa samuchayaha is highlighted. Importance of samuchayaha is, you know, is presented here. And for samuchaya means what? Samuchaya between two. Which two should be combined? So which are two, combination of the two, which cannot be taken as combination. Why? Because, they only can take it as anga angi bhava sambandha. That is not is meant here. All these are all, we had understood only from the commentators. Again, which phalam you get, how it produces which phalam, isn't it? Karmana devalokaha. Again, it's from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the mantra is there. No? Putrena manushyalokaha, karmana pitralokaha, vidyaya upasanena devalokaha. All this, come from some of the Upanishads also. So that meaning Bhagavad Pada brings in his, which means from a thorough knowledge of everything, to comment upon this correctly. Isn't it?
Is samuchaya also dealt with in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad?
You were attending the classes or not?
Yes.
Yeah. So I told you, whatever is discussed in this Vishavasya Upanishad briefly is much more elaborately discussed in Brihadaranyakam, because Brihadaranyakam is the Brahmana Upanishad commentary on Mantra Upanishad. Ishavasyam is a Mantra Upanishad. Brihadaranyakam is a Brahmana Upanishad. It is the elaboration of this there. Okay? Yeah, we'll stop here and we can talk to you, okay? Because it's time for lunch. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. I'm sorry for those who attended my previous class and have come today. I repeat a little bit from this experience, so much exercise, took a little more time to make other people to feel it comfortable at the class, okay? Because I didn't tell them before this way. Is it clear?
Yeah. Can I ask you something? Is prayer a form of meditation? Is prayer a form of meditation?
Of course, prayer, worship, any karma, any action, physical activity or oral activity, what you pray for, what you pray, what you do, anything can become meditation. Okay. If the mind is focused there. But it must be associated with Bhagavan. Suppose in prayer, what I tell you, when you pray to Bhagavan, you are really focused. Because what you are praying for, you are so desperate, you feel so helpless, and spontaneously you seek Bhagavan's help, isn't it? Seek help. That is what is prayer. In worship also, you express your thanks to Bhagavan. In prayer, you ask what you want. That's a slight difference. In worship, prayer is implied also. Is it? In prayer, just begging what you exactly want. Intense, fervent prayer means. In keeping with the need of the hour, isn't it? So when you pray, of course, you're addressing Bhagavan means your mind is only in that. It also becomes meditation. In worship also, that's why in worship what we do, in worship means we have form of worship, isn't it? In the form of worship, we call it kayikam karma, vachikam karma, manasam karma. When I do chandi and all, the chanting I do, you see, it's very difficult to keep the mind 3.5 hours focused, isn't it? Nothing is there. So when you offer flowers, etc., offer flowers, you bill and all that, it's called kayikam karma, physical activity. But it's a form of worship. See, I keep the altar symbol for Bhagavan the whole, and I do arati, and then I do namaskaram, isn't it? And I also chant also. So orally I'm chanting, reciting, physically I'm doing all these things, no? Waving the light, etc., bring the bell, and then do namaskaram. All these physical activities also become what? Physical and oral. Where is my mind?
Yeah.
In the karma, isn't it? Then my mind is focused in that. The object of meditation becomes what? Whether I see the murti, whether my mind is in the mantras I chant, in a mechanic chant also I see the murti, my mind is not elsewhere else. Even though I do not see the meaning sometimes, my mind is not anywhere else. I do not think of you, I think of Bir, I do not think of somebody else, I do not think of India, I do not think of London, I do not think of anybody else. I do not even think of who is sitting next to me. And my mind is totally in what I am doing. Isn't it? This is as good as meditation. That is why in our worship, the form of worship, whether it is a physical kayikam or vachikam, or even if I do without doing anything, in physical activity, mind is involved. I can't do mind, keeping the mind also mechanically, I can't do anything, isn't it? Kayikam, vachikam is also meditation for us. That is why we call upasanam, we say, the non-Vedic form of meditation, form of worship, based on the Vedic vision, because in Vedic period, we didn't have the murtis and things. Okay, so this is the Hindu form of worship, wherein we have this altar, the physically we do lot of things. This we divide as kayikam, vachikam, manasam. All the three activities, physical, oral, mental, all are taken to be meditation. Why? Because even though the form of worship is different, the spirit behind the form of worship is the same Vedic vision. Isn't it? Therefore, we value it. That is why when you are chanting, we say, don't chant mechanically. Then it becomes useless. Of course, it is something, maybe it's good, but still it's not that effective. When you do physically, you sit for the puja, don't, Swamiji always tells, don't do Ekas Chandi, Ekas Rudram, and then my go mind. At least do one Rudram with the focus attention, he says. Chant for 40 minutes, something enough. Don't sit through five hours and the mind goes elsewhere, and also swaras go somewhere. And then people want, because especially when you live abroad, people know they're very busy with lots of things, and children will make noise, and they're waiting for hungry, for prasadam and all that. He told in Kuwait, they used to do all, a lot of Tamil Brahmins live in Kuwait, so they used to get together and they used a lot of chanting and all, the chanting. And Hamji said, don't do long pujas, okay, do for one chandi, do properly, sorry, not chandi, one rudram, rudraparanam, one rudram, do correctly. You can focus, which means you offer flowers because the mind must be there. Only then it becomes upasana, it's meditation. So even though it's a physical activity, it's a form of worship because Bhagavan is involved there. Your mind is focused in the karma which you're doing, therefore it is as good as meditation. So even though you're chanting in worship, it's a oral activity, but still the mind is involved there and our focus is on Bhagavan, therefore it is upasana. It serves. And also Manasa Puja, isn't it? Even when we chant these also, till next class maybe, next hours. Therefore, in prayer also is meditation, we can say. Because Bhagavan must be involved. That is why even if you're closing your eyes, okay, not doing anything physically, mentally only you're doing. But the object is not Bhagavan. Simply, I just to develop, just to remain calm, really calm my mind, I focus my mind on something. I see the light, or I see a flower, I see an apple, or I see something else. I think of sweet Radha's face. If it is not Bhagavan, the object is not something symbolizes Bhagavan, then it is not meditation. You can say it is some technique for improving your concentration. It's good. It's a good technique for improving your concentration. You cannot call it dhyanam. We say the attention is, that simply focus attention is meditation means every day we are meditative, highly meditative. Some worry comes finished. The whole mind, the whole attention is drawn by that worry, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. When you are watching cricket, you are meditative. Yeah. So that's why what Shastam says, that's what all those things are. Now, because the objects of pleasure also, because in a way they hold attention, isn't it? They help you divert. It's okay, but we don't call it meditation. Okay, we'll go for lunch. Come back.